House Finance Committee to order. Time is 2:25 p.m., April 24th. For the record, we have Representatives Moses, Lancaster, Hudson, Foster, Whitaker, Harris, Croft, and Davies. Today we have four bills before us, and we will start with 105, Senate Bill 133, House Bill 250, House Bill 179, possibly in that order. We will start with 105 first. I see the sponsor here. Representative Stevens, please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, STEM education is one of the most important things we do here in the legislature, and we know that in the last few years, education has taken a tremendous hit. At the same time, we're demanding more of our system in terms of the exit exam. And then at the same time, we're also having great difficulties of finding, retaining, hiring teachers and administrators. In the last 10 years, we've seen a 30% increase in our cost of living index, while at the same time, the funding formula has increased by only 5%. And this is exactly what's putting a great strain on our districts and our boroughs. Foundation formula, of course, is based on a specific dollar amount per student. The base student allocation was established in 1998 at $3,040 per student and has not increased since that time. The Senate, or the committee substitute for House Bill 105, increases that allocation by $101. It increases the per student dollar to $4,041. Certainly, inflation in the past 14 years has had a tremendous impact on our public school funding. And the purchasing powers of the dollar we've given to education has certainly been eroded over that time. Even though the state has increased substantially our contribution to the 53 school districts since 1988, the effect of inflation and student enrollment has really negated that growth. And so the purchasing power of the student dollar has been diminished. So the performance standards and assessments are going to go a long way to hold our educational system accountable. I think that's all of this is a step in the right direction, but it does have a substantial impact on the financial resources of our school districts. The problems we have in retaining and recruiting a highly qualified teacher workforce at a time when teachers are in a short supply is not easy for any of our districts, particularly when those that are remote and isolated. Public education is faced with a tremendous responsibility, greater responsibility, at the same time having a reduction in the purchasing power of our student dollar. I think it's a difficult situation to keep asking our districts to meet all of these responsibilities while facing a dwindling budget. So this increase, $101 per student provided in HB 105, certainly will help our school districts, won't answer all of the questions, won't solve all the problems, will be a great step forward. And tremendous help to education. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for the sponsor, Representative Davies?
Thank you. Representative Stevens, you talked about the inflation. By your calculations, does this increase cover that 30% inflation?
No, Representative Davies, it doesn't. The way we had calculated it is the original amount that was in this bill was almost 29 million, 28.9. And that would have covered the inflationary cost, but this does not. This is substantially less, but we felt the amendment was necessary in order to get the support of the House.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 30% inflation increase, that's been in the last 10 years?
Yes, Representative Buddy, from the Anchorage School District's computations, 30% increase cost of living index, 5% increase in foundation formula.
And do we have any information that the amount of money that was being spent at that time was the appropriate amount of money we're looking at 30% increase from something, but maybe that's something we were spending money at that level coming off the 80s was an inappropriate level.
Representative Bundy, I fully understand what you're saying, and no, there's no way of telling if that was the exact right amount, whether it was or not. That's the amount that we did spend at that time.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative,
I have a couple more questions. We have in past legislation required that the majority of the money that the state provides go into classroom instruction and not be absorbed by administration. There are some schools still getting waivers on that. How many schools are putting the majority of their money into actual classroom instruction and not administration at this point? Or put it the other way, how many are still getting waivers?
I'm sorry, Representative, but I don't know that, but I'm sure the department would and may be able to answer that.
I'll save my questions for the department.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsor? Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 30% inflation factor, in coming to the conclusion that that is the correct number over that period of time, was it taken into consideration that there had been, over that period of time, an increase in contributions from local property taxes? That is, as the tax base increased, was that taken into consideration?
You know, I'm not certain, Representative Whitaker, whether that would have been taken into consideration. These are figures that I received from the Anchorage School District, and I don't know whether that included increases in property taxes you're talking about.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, if I might just follow up, and I'm not trying to stump you here, Representative Stevens. I'm just trying to get at that 30% inflation number and trying to determine if, indeed, we have taken steps through the years, through either the local contribution increasing as property values has increased, and that therefore offsetting some inflation. And in addition to that, as federal funds have increased, have we considered that as being something of an offset for inflation factoring as well? And assuming that neither of those were factored, then the lower number of 20 million as opposed to 28, 29 million might be more reflective of a true inflation number as opposed to the higher number.
Could very well be.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Representative Hudson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, when was the last time that the foundation formula was increased numerically? And I'm not talking about Senate Bill 36. Prior to that, your records show that.
Well, it has been increased substantially, and actually since 1988, it's been increased by 54%. So there, you know, the state has substantially increased the amount of money going into our school districts. But inflation has had
per capita formula itself.
A dollar amount per student you're talking about? I don't have that here. Sorry.
Any other questions? I think the department may be able to answer that. Representative Davies.
Thank you. Representative Stevens, I've been talking to a number of the school boards and superintendents from around the state, and I'm sure you have too. What's your impression from those discussions in terms of the state of the need for funding in those districts in terms of things like plans to lay off teachers and cut programs and those kinds of things? Have you been hearing those kinds of needs out there in those discussions?
Yes, Representative Davies. I think there's a tremendous problem in our districts. We're seeing districts having to pink slip teachers at the end of the year, knowing full well they have to hire them back in the fall. I think it's a real a disservice to the entire profession when we know we have to have the teachers back in any event, and they're good teachers, and we don't want to get rid of them either. But we're forced into laying them off temporarily until we know the funding is available. I think you're finding, frankly, districts like my own that are facing the cap and having a problem with not being able to fund the things they want to fund because we've reached the cap. And that's why I think it's so healthy that when we do put money into education, that we put it into the foundation formula, because as we put money into the foundation formula, it also raises the cap and gives the communities a little more latitude there.
Can you, when you say reach the cap, what are you referring to?
The cap is the amount that the local districts can put of their own monies into schools before they start having to, for every dollar they put in, if they pass the cap, for every dollar they put in, the amount from the state is reduced to $1. So there's a...
The disparity test you're talking
about. Yeah, the cap really forces the districts to... frankly, I think what we're seeing around the state is that districts are finding ways to circumvent the cap and funding educational needs that they see without going through that cap.
Thank you.
Representative Bundy.
You mentioned local contributions, but not all schools make local contributions. That's correct.
Absolutely, Representative Bundy. There are there are districts that that are receive no funding through from the local community and receive no taxes at all outside of receive no monies for education outside of the state contribution. But there are communities, as we know, well know, that that do put a lot of their own money into education.
Any other questions for the sponsor? Representative Harris.
Thank you. Representative Stevens, welcome to our illustrious Finance Committee again. Your number has been reduced from what you initially started this bill at, and it's been mentioned that it doesn't meet inflation. It's down, what, $9 million or whatever that you initially requested. Are you familiar, and I'm sure you are, with the piece of legislation that's around that deals with cost of operating schools? The Mr. Chairman, the if in fact that piece of legislation ever becomes a reality and we do that, we're probably looking at next year. I think we all know that there are schools in the state that are compared to the one of Anchorage, and that actually cost a tremendous amount more to operate and whatever than operating the schools in a larger city. I think, from my point of view, I think we're probably going to spend more money next year on education funding because we're going to find that we're underfunding a number of schools that it does cost more to operate than we're giving them the opportunity to do. So I'm very supportive of what you have here, and you know, I signed on as your first co-sponsor initially, and well, we supported that. But I think as this bill has continued to move along, and we've worked with various members to make this happen, I think it's a good compromise, and I certainly will support us looking at the cost of operating schools in the state, and next year hopefully we'll again address this issue based upon some sort of a good study that has factual information that we can look at all schools, including Kodiak.
Thanks. Thank you, Representative Harris. You're absolutely right. I think it's essential we do that study, and hopefully that'll move right ahead, and we find out what the cost differential is in various communities. And we may be facing some additional costs when we know the answers to that. Thank you.
Any other Representative Davies?
I guess, wouldn't it be easier to get, assuming that there is going to be a requirement for an increase, to get that increase if we'd already built the base up a little bit?
Any other questions?
He's answering my question.
Okay.
I just had one.
That's your fifth one.
He's had one more.
Are there any more questions for the sponsor? Question for the sponsor.
Oh, I just want to know if he could answer the one I just asked.
Oh.
Now, what you're suggesting, would you mind saying it again, Representative Davies?
Is it okay, Mr. Chair?
Representative Davies.
The arguments were made that we shouldn't go too fast in raising the amount this year because we might discover next year that we've got some needs out there that aren't met through the cost study. And I guess what I'm suggesting is whatever we can put in the base this year is just going to help us get to that level next year, and I'm asking if you agree with that.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Representative Davis. We need to face the fact that that we have some serious problems right now in education, and anything we can do to get us to in a little bit better shape so we can face even a bigger problem the following year, I think is good. I've heard the comment that, well, let's wait till next year, but we will be doing a disservice to education if we don't do something this year.
Any other questions? If not, we'll get back to you.
Thank you, Representative.
Call Ernie, somewhat from the department, the education department. Eddie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the school finance manager for the Department of Education. First, I'd like to say that the department appreciates the opportunity to testify before this committee today. Mr. Chairman, as Senator or Representative Stevens was addressing the committee, I heard a number of questions that he attempted to answer, and I think he did a good job, but I'd like to make a couple clarifications if that would be appropriate at this point. Mr. Chairman, first, the statement of inflation going up 30% in the last 10 years, I agree 100% with him. While the legislature has increased the base student allocation or funding for education only 5%, Representative Whitaker raised a good question about, well, have we accounted for increases in local property value or increases in federal impact aid? In response to that, Representative Whitaker, the formula self-adjusts for those increases. What we're talking about is the base student allocation, in which we determine the minimum level of revenue that districts need to support education in their community. Then that money is divvied up between the three pots of local, federal, and state. So as property values go up, if you hold the base student allocation and enrollment constant, then state aid or state general fund requirement would go down. So what we're talking about here is the base student allocation or the base allocation to school districts over a 10-year period has only increased 5%, while inflation has increased 30%.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I think I'm getting to the meat of my question now, and that's going to help me make a decision. So if I might, just very quickly, then there's a one-to-one reduction. The ratio is 1:1.
Through the chair, close enough. Not exactly with impact aid, but it's close enough.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bundy?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I haven't gotten an update on this year. You had heard my question earlier about 36 required the majority of the money going to the classroom because a great deal of money was being absorbed by administration. How many school districts are currently asking for waivers, so they're putting more money into administration than they are in the classroom?
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, I do understand your question, and that was the provision that requires school districts to spend 70% of their funds on instruction. The districts may apply for a waiver from the State Board of Education if there are circumstances beyond their control that they cannot meet that requirement. In fiscal year 2001, we had 24 school districts apply to the Department of Education for waivers because of circumstances beyond their control. In many of those school districts, what you find is you have a very dispersed, small population, so you're operating many sites, and so you have very high operational costs. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily high administrative costs, but in many of the districts that are requesting waivers, it's high operational costs because of the small population and the dispersed population they're trying to serve.
Yeah. And all 24 of those were granted?
Through the chair, all 24 were granted.
And I certainly grant you it's high overhead, but it's not getting into the classroom as an instructional dollars directly, and certainly got to have a site. Two other questions, if I might. How many single-site schools do we have where, again, we have part of this high administrative overhead, and how many schools or districts do we have where they make no local contribution?
It's not high administrative.
Through the chair, I'm going to answer the second question first. currently we have 19 REAAs, regional education attendance areas in this state, that do not make a local tax appropriation to education. But the administration and the department's position has always been impact aid is in lieu of property taxes. In fact, if you look at the impact aid law itself, it refers to a contribution in lieu of property taxes. Those lands have been moved by federal action from the tax rolls. So even if these areas were to incorporate as boroughs, most of those lands are still non-taxable and would still generate impact aid funds, which would be used to offset general fund requirement in the foundation program.
Bottom line is they don't reach in their own pocket and pay for their schools. Is that the case?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bundy, if you're asking do they make actual property tax contribution to their schools, the answer is not through an organized government. They make it through the federal government.
And number of single sites?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bundy, I don't have that off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Representative Davies and I would.
Thank you. Eddie, again, you made the correction that this isn't administrative necessarily. This is this high cost that's driven for the waivers. It's oftentimes high operational costs. And those, what can you characterize what those costs are? I mean, I assume they're things like fuel and things that we're hoping to get at the out of the cost study. But I guess my question is, does the department have studies that focus on the question of how well students learn if they don't have a warm and safe and adequate environment in which to learn?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, I don't have any studies that would point directly to that. And when I talk about high operational costs, what I'm talking about are economies of scale. In many of our school districts, and I'll use Lake and Peninsula as an example, Lake and Peninsula serves 15 communities. They have, I believe, one community that has over 100 students. Well, they operate a school in each of those 15, so they don't have the population or the economies of scale to spread those operational costs over. Whereas in Anchorage, Fairbanks, or even here in Juneau, we don't have a school that's serving less than 250 kids, other than charter school or alternative school. So we're able to spread those fixed costs across a larger population. And those are the types of operational costs that I'd be referring to.
Representative Davies?
Well, I guess my sense is that the cost of fuel is pretty high in some of those more remote spots, and wouldn't that help drive some of those operational costs as well?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, you're correct. Fuel costs have gone up all over the state in the past year, and that is one of the cries that you'll hear from the school districts this year is the high fuel costs, and it's forcing some of those districts to request waivers.
Any other questions for the department? Sorry, Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eddie, you were referring to federal dollars from unincorporated areas. You referred to those as impact dollars, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Whitaker, they're called federal impact aid dollars, and they're in lieu of local property taxes.
Okay. If I can stop you there. Using your word, in lieu of, the inference is that given a local property tax contribution, those dollars would go away. Is that correct?
Through the chair, what that means, Representative Whitaker, is those properties are non-taxable due to some type of federal intervention. And the federal government has come back through their own program and said, we recognize that we have an obligation to support education because we move those properties off the tax rolls. So this is our tax contribution for those properties.
Okay, and then if I may just follow up. So to answer my question, your answer would be no, those dollars would not go away given a local contribution over and above those impact dollars.
Through the chair, if you were to incorporate those regions into boroughs, those properties still would not be taxable and they would still generate the federal dollars.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for the department at this time?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, one more. There was a question to Representative Stevens. When was the last time the student value was increased prior to Senate Bill 36? That was in 1993 under the instructional unit method, it increased by $1,000. I believe that was about a 1.7% increase. So as I was mentioning earlier, when we talk about the last 10 years, that 1.7% increase plus the 3.3 under Senate Bill 36 gets you to your 5% increase, while inflation increased over 30% during that same time frame.
Any other questions at this time, Representative Davies?
The federal impact aids, do some urban districts get that kind of impact aid as well?
Yeah.
Fairbanks and Anchorage.
Through the chair, Representative Davies, I believe we only have 6 school districts in the state that do not currently receive impact aid. So most of the urban districts do. And in fact, Anchorage and Fairbanks are really good examples. The military installations there, where the people live on the base, that is non-taxable land, and they generate impact aid revenue.
Any other questions? Any more to add?
Just one more, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. I appreciate your patience with me. The question about the cost differentials or the adjustments that we're looking at, you all heard a bill the other day dealing with the cost differentials. I think it's important that you understand that that is dealing with the cost differences by region to provide a comparable program. It is not what we're here today talking about, and that's the level of funding, adequate level of funding. Some would argue with me that this may not be an adequate level of funding, but my point is I'm trying to express that under the cost differentials, whatever the report comes back at, what we're going to see is we're going to see some shift in money. Some differentials will go up, some will go down. I would hesitate to suggest that we will see a large increase required as a result of that study, a large increase in funding. So the adjustment that we will see as a result of that study isn't really an adjustment to deal with inflation or the adequate level of funding. It's to adjust the formula, the way the money's distributed within the formula.
Representative Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, but Eddie, don't you think there will be an increase as a result of that?
Through the chair, Representative Lancaster, there probably will be an increase. The last couple times that the cost differentials were looked at, though, the increases were very modest. Through the foundation program, we're talking about a $665 million program in the O2 budget. Absent any increases the legislature votes in. The portion that makes up the cost differentials is less than $70 million. So we're talking about a tenth of the total program.
Any other questions? Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you.
You'll be here.
I'll be around.
We may have other questions.
I'd be happy to.
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I wanted to applaud the sponsor for bringing this before you. And once again, I'm advocating that we increase the formula. You talk about deja vu. I've been doing this now for 17 years, and we've only had a couple successes in that period of time, both of which Eddie just mentioned to you. I thought we did some good things in 36. Many things have been mentioned around the table today about the formula. I personally would like to see some modifications and fine-tuning done to that formula. But unfortunately, those bills are not before us, and those subjects are not before us. I still think we need to do that for equity purposes, and in the process, we might redistribute some funding. But I think this is probably the best that we're going to see this year. As you know, the bill that I submitted on the Senate side would have raised this number by $210. This is an increase of $101. So it's less than half of what I believe is necessary to adequately fund education this year. I applaud you for bringing it up, and I certainly applaud the sponsor. I hope that we can find some working level between what this body may do on this bill and what the Senate may do. And I just wanted to encourage you to move forward on that and to thank you very much for bringing it up and to thank the sponsor, because we need help out there. We really do.
I guess Representative Davies has a question.
Senator Taylor, can I reinterpret your remarks to say that we shouldn't be too timid here?
Well, I don't think I was being through the chair. I didn't think of myself as being overly bold to suggest 210. And let me just, I don't want to leave that in just a jocular form. We don't have a single nurse left in a school in any one of the four schools that are within my Senate district and haven't had for years. We don't have music programs. We don't have soccer programs. We don't have coaches like some people do for soccer programs in their elementary schools. We can't afford to fly our young people to interscholastic events like state basketball tournaments without holding bake sales. There is a disparity. There are 30 different states right now out of the 50 that are standing in front of district court and federal court judges trying to explain the inequities within their formula. So I am very serious about adjusting this formula so that it has some rational basis other than just who happened to be in political power 15 years ago when these things were established. And I would like to get to those things. But in the meantime, even with what I think are some of the bad inequities that exist within our formula, the incoming tide raises all ships. And we should, at this point, adjust this formula upward. I believe this is a good compromise number. As I said, it's not everything I would like, John, but I thank you each for bringing it up, and I wish you the best on this legislation. And again, I think this is about the fourth time I've had the privilege of testifying before your committee, and I appreciate that honor, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Before you get to
Representative Hudson.
I've worked with this man now for 15 years, and I can thank you personally and on the record for your constant attention to trying to make certain that education is fully funded. Robin, you've done a good job, and thanks for coming forward on this bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Alan Osterman from Kodiak. I'm here in support of House Bill 105, and it's $20 million that it's at. As other people, I would have liked to seen it larger. I think that in the long term, that we need to put more money in education than we have in the past. A declining area, even back when I was in the Borough Assembly, 85-86, one of the arguments that we had was that education funding had not been increased for a long time, even then. Since then, there's been very little increases in the formula. I think this is long overdue and is something we need to continue to pursue. I'm so much in favor of increasing education that I've introduced legislation to have a school head tax to help pay for it, if you guys are interested in talking about that while I'm here. I don't think you are. But I do support this bill. I hope that you pass it on out, send it over to our side of the body, and let us address it, and hopefully we'll get something done this year. Thank you.
Representative Bundy.
Yes. For the people that are listening, your school head tax, would there be any guarantee that I actually went to schools?
Only the guarantee that you'll give it as legislator.
In other words, it goes to the general fund.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the Senator?
Thank you,
Senator. We do have one person on teleconference, Patrick Hickey, Kenai Borough School District. Patrick, are you on? Can you hear me, Patrick?
He's not on.
He's not on?
He hung up.
Took too long, Mr. Chairman.
We do have Carl Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, and I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you. I'll try to keep my comments brief because I know you've got other people who want to testify. Leading into this meeting here today, I had great concern about the way we were going to address our future. At the time, I felt that there was a very real scarcity mentality here, and the possibility of increasing funding was really at risk. I would say here within the last week or so, I think people have taken more of a broader look, and we're looking to the future. I testified earlier today on another bill that I felt would not get us where we need to go. we've passed legislation that provides for benchmark testing and for exit exams. We're trying to address accountability. We've been before you many times and in your offices talking about helping us build the infrastructure that we need to make good on the promise that all kids will be able to meet those challenges. To date, we've not been able to have a constructive discussion on that, and I think with the with this bill and the stage that we're in right now, I think that, that the discussion is starting to take place. I would have to say that I did serve on the governor's task force that dealt with the A-plus study. We identified $34 million that was needed to be able to do the job. And I think that even that was a modest request. Just in telling you, there's one school district that had 70 vacancies, went into Anchorage to try to hire those people, came away with 12 positions that were filled. That's 58 positions that haven't been filled. We still have some time. Hopefully they can pick up a few more. If those positions aren't filled, they will be filled with substitutes who may not be qualified. What are the chances of those kids being able to reach the standards when you're dealing with substitutes or with people who are unqualified? The suggestion I would make to you is this. Over a period of time, we've been unable, through our loss of buying power, to be able to attract and retain quality teachers. I'm only talking about teachers. I'm not talking about all the structural things that need to be, take place to embed these standards. So sticking with those teachers, if we were to look at a cost model into the future, and that cost model were to represent what we spent in the past, it would not reflect our ability to hire and retain new teachers. I have a real concern about that because that's where we're going to make the greater where we're not. Keeping to my comments here, I would be in favor of increasing or restoring the number back to the original $28 million that was contained in 105. I know that's a strain for you, but try to project us into the future and where we're going to be. We need a little broader view. We need what I believe is a sound fiscal long-range plan. We need to be able to broaden our perspective of the future for Velasco. To continue to look at the future from a narrow perspective will lead us into hitting that wall in about 4 to 5 years. What will be left for us is to pick up the pieces and try to build the future again. So I would suggest to you right now, we're talking about 105, we're talking about the present. But as we deal with the present, how do we project ourselves into the future? It's going to require increased revenue. We're going to have increased costs for essential services. I know I'm getting very broad here, and I appreciate you giving me the latitude, but I would say we not only support the bill in its current form, and I want to thank all of you for bringing it forward. We'd like to see that restored to the initial 28. And oh, by the way, if we look at the learning opportunity grants and include that $6 million, you're at the $34 million mark that the A-plus study called for. $34 million is only a modest request. It's only for 1 year, and we have a 5-year projection that we need to get over. So with that, I really appreciate you folks taking this time. The issue of the foundation formula and what we provide through it is very large, and I know there have been a lot of questions, but I'll stop my comments here and try to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Bundy.
I know you speak for superintendents who want to speak for school children, and I'm sure you're aware that we have about a $600 million fiscal gap, and that whatever we do now, those children that you speak for will have to pay taxes to fill that gap. So every dollar we spend is a dollar they're going to have to provide in taxes in the future. And I hope you keep that in consideration as you talk about modest requests.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond. I represent the School Board Association and their employees, which are superintendents. I would say this. As we look at the future, there's potential for increased revenue, possibly through gas. The ability for us to pay now in taxes at a modest rate and to include dollars to be leveraged maybe out of the earnings reserve. There are a number of options that are available that we can employ in a modest rate to offset the decline in revenue and to project a better picture for the future. I am being modest in this respect, but if we're looking to grow an economy, you're going to do it through education, not only K-12, but also through the university. And so I would ask all of you to remember that as well. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Carl. Patrick Hickey is back online. Patrick?
Yes, sir. This is Patrick. Can you hear me?
If you could get a little closer to the mic.
Yes, thank you very much for this opportunity. I would also like to support of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District for House Bill 105. We were actually a little more supportive of the 4085 figure that was a companion to Senate Bill 1, and I would ask that you consider that any of the cost differential numbers that would have to be adjusted after using the Anchorage baseline as 1.0, the area cost differentials actually does constitute a rather small component of the overall budget, and the impact of changing those is not going to be as significant as you might think at the outset. But I do appreciate this opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 105. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Any questions? Thank you. That's all I have that has signed up for public testimony. Does anyone wish to make a short statement? Or I think that we do have enough to pass this bill out. Representative Moses?
I kind of resent the fact that we use the physical gap as an excuse for not funding something as important as education. To me, there's nothing more important, and we should be funding it properly. The reason why we have a physical gap of 600 and some odd million dollars is because we haven't had the guts to take care of it. And we shouldn't use the cop-out to not fund education.
Thank you. We do have an amendment before us. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move number one.
I object.
Mr. Chairman, this is actually a very modest amendment. Actually, if you look on page one, line six, it really only changes the second four to a nine.
I object to it.
Mr. Chairman, what it does is actually, of course, it brings us up closer to the inflation number. It would increase the amount by $151 on the base student allocation. That would bring us to a number in the vicinity of $30 million, reflecting the fact that there's already, you know, that this is actually only a $15 million increase over last year. I believe that it's a reasonable increase, and that it would get us closer to the level, as we've listened to the districts from around the state, the kinds of problems we've had in terms of having to lay off teachers, give notices, that sort of thing. There are some districts that are in more serious straits than others, but virtually every district I've talked to, as their representative have come through the halls and through our offices, has indicated that they need at least this amount. I was talking just recently to the folks from Sitka. They're saying that they really need $200 increase here just to keep from laying off teachers. Even if they got this amount, they'd be laying off teachers. And they've already eliminated all the sports money and all that stuff. They're doing that with excessive amount. I think this is actually the minimum amount that we need. It's also a pretty special amendment in my mind, and I'm kind of fond of it, and I think we're going to have to talk about it for quite a while.
You know, Representative Moses made a very good point, and I agree with Representative Moses and the amount of money that has been funded. I think that myself personally that we should be getting up closer to the $200 figure for what Sitka would like to see. I think that in listening to the department talk about when was the last time we had an increase, what inflation did is very real. So I agree with you. I wish we could do that. I wish we could, if I was keen for the day, I think I would get it up to the $200 limit and what have you, because I believe what we have done here in this legislation, in this building, is not funded education as it should have. But for whatever reasons, political reasons or whatever it is, we didn't do it. Now, to get this amount of money in the capital budget, in this bill. Now, we have to do, we have to pull a lot of strings to get it through. We have been talking about education, and I hope that the people of the state does not let us down and come back next year and tell us how much money we are not funding education and how much it's hurting today. Because this is right now, there isn't anybody in this Capitol building, the legislators, that are saying, there are few that are saying that we want to have more money in the Capitol budget or in the education budget. The push actually came from the public. The push came from the public, and I hope you keep it up. But right now, if we raise this year, or I don't know if it's going to get through. It'll get through the House. I don't know if it'll get through the other side looking like this. There are a lot of things we have to negotiate to get out of here with, and I wish that we could do this, but right today, if we could send this over, the sooner the better. It could give us more time to negotiate our way out of here or to increase the school funding. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of points. You know, we've talked about compromise already, but we're still crafting our proposal. I wonder who we're compromising with and why at this stage. If we in the House Finance Committee think that $150 is the proper amount and that generating $30 million of new revenue, let's start with that. Compromise is a very important part of this process, but it's a difficult thing to do with yourself. We ought to put the amount that we think is appropriate, and later, when others come with a different view, reflect that in a compromise. But I'm worried that in the prior committee and this one that we compromise with what we imagine might be the position of the other body. We've had at least two senators here say we're too low. So we may be wrong in what we're guessing about people wanting to compromise on. That's too complicated a game for me to play, I guess. I prefer that we at least, in this early stage, and it is still early, put the number that we think is appropriate. Wait for those that think it should be lower to say why. And then at that point, it may then mean we start at 150 and get to 125. But we'll never know unless we start with the number that we like. There was a Bob and Ray radio show way back that we had the tapes of growing up. Maybe some of you old fogies remember it. I only heard it on reruns. But where they talked about...
Are you trying to get votes?
I'm losing John votes. Talked about a cereal that got soggy even before you put milk on it. And I worry that's what we're doing. Let's put the number we think is appropriate. Later on, we may not be able to get it. We may not be able to go. But I think there are the votes in this committee. There are by definition the votes in this committee for the number that we like. Let's do the number we like, whatever it is. I'm satisfied if it ain't my number, at least it's our number. And that's fair enough. But not our imagination as to what somebody else's number might be. And finally, the formula itself, with all its defects, is going to generate a reduction in state contribution of about $15 million. So if we only set it at 20, we're only $5 million above water. And I worry what happens as those compromises go. You could very easily get into a situation where this is down into the 15 range, and we're saying, look at the good work we did, and districts say, you didn't send me any more than you sent me last year. That very scenario that you were worried about, that after all this pressure and all this good and us doing a little bit of good, it's not generating anything at the district level. Let's start at least with a number that has enough above 15 that we're actually getting a plus in the state contribution.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we debating the bill at this point?
This amendment and I guess the The amendment is to raise it $50.
Okay, fine. Then to the amendment and spilling over into the bill. If I might, Mr. Chairman, we have begun that negotiating process. Politics being what it is, we debated this significantly in the House Majority Caucus. We're debating it now in committee. We know that we'll have to compromise both in the caucus. We know that we'll have to compromise with the House minority. We know that we'll have to compromise with the Senate majority. We know that the Senate will indeed have to compromise with its own minority. And we know in the end that the governor will have to sign this. And so we begin with all of that, and we pick a number. It would have been nice had we been able to start with $45 million, $35 million. Pick a number. We chose $20 million because we think that is a reasonable compromise position, knowing that there are going to be others who are going to add and subtract to that. $20 million is a reasonable number. It would be nice if it were more, but it's reasonable given the circumstances that we have to deal with. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Lancaster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd have to agree with Representative Whitaker. I'd hate to try and raise this number to some arbitrary figure that we can't substantiate and end up with nothing at the end of the day because we couldn't have compromised at some point in time.
Question?
Representative Bundy.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, we have lots of needs in the state. Education is one of them. And I've yet to hear any educational institution say to any legislative branch, you've given us too much, take some back. And I suspect if it was $200 or $300 or $400 a student, they would gladly take all the money and they'd find a place to spend it. Making an effort to increase education when many other agencies have been flat funded or decreased, I think is a point of view that we should keep in mind. It is, as often said about our work here, the art of the possible. And I still think that 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing. And and I guess suggest that there isn't any amount that people wouldn't complain was too little.
Is there any other comments?
Do they have to brief it easy?
Yes.
Guys, with yourself. Go home and compromise.
Call House Finance back to order.
Yes.
We have before us Amendment Number 1. Any more discussion on Amendment Number 1? Call for the question. Please call the roll.
Representative Lancaster?
No.
Representative Whitaker?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Croft?
Yes.
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Harris?
No.
Representative Hudson?
No.
Representative Williams?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
2-8.
I believe
Representative Moses.
Oh, yes. Sorry, Representative Moses.
Yes.
3-8.
That's good. Motion is defeated. Are there any more amendments to come before the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mulder.
I would move Amendment Number 2, which is intent language.
You've heard the motion. We had it before you for a little while here. Any objection or question? Representative Davies?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't disagree with this as kind of a goal statement. I hope the co-chair isn't intending that there be some kind of separate accounting attached to this sort of thing. I don't think he is, but I just want to get that clear.
I appreciate that, Representative Davies. No, you hit the nail on the head where I want to go, and that is basically putting some outcome-based or performance-based objectives along with the budget, or as we've done with the budget, along with this increased appropriation for education. And that being that we through the inclusion of more money, we're hoping that the overall
productivity and outcomes that the schools are trying to achieve are actually achieved. And so that we are making a policy statement here that we're trying, with more money, to encourage them to do better, and we'd like to see evidence of that in the future.
Betty, would you like to comment on it, or?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the second paragraph, I believe in another piece of legislation that we'll have before us here, will call for a similar report, and I'm just wondering if it might be the amendment sponsor's intention that they have separate reports, or could they use the one report to cover both requests?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bundy, it would certainly be efficient to do it in one report, and it would be certainly consistent in my frame of thought.
I just, for the record, wanted to mention it.
You bet. Representative Davies?
Sure. I guess another sort of technical question. Is it your intent that this go into the statute as just attend this bill as a letter of intent?
I would prefer that it go into an intent section in the bill.
The bill only deals with the one number, so I'm a little confused.
Way, it really doesn't matter, Representative Davies, from that standpoint. From my perspective, if it's attached, I think the school districts have and the department has heard it, so attached it is fine.
I think because of the way the statute, what we're dealing with in the statutes here, that just running it as a letter of intent along with the bill probably would accomplish the same purpose.
Right. I agree.
Any more discussion on the motion? Move amendment number 2. Any objection to moving amendment number 2? Not so ordered. The wishes of the committee? Representative Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass for the committee CS for HB 105 as amended by the Finance Committee with individual recommendations. Any accompanying fiscal note?
Any objection to moving? Representative Davies.
Just for a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. This is an issue, of course, that's really important to many of the members in the legislature, but particularly to members in our caucus, and we're concerned that this number, we appreciate the number that's in here, of course, but we're concerned that the number is too low, and I'm sure this will continue to be part of our discussion as we go through the next couple weeks. With that, I withdraw my objection.
Any other discussion on the motion? Any objection to moving the bill out of committee? Not so ordered. Next, we'll take House Bill 133.
Senate Bill
133, I'm sorry.
What are you doing now?
I'm sorry, this is Senate Bill 133. Senate Bill 133. Opposite test. When we left here the other day, we had amendment by Lancaster, Representative Lancaster. We discussed that. I would. You have a
motion's pending.
Another amendment here by Representative Kropp. Is this?
I think we have a motion pending.
We do have a motion. Motion to move amendment number 2. I guess we had it. Lancaster's amendment. Is there any more discussion on this amendment? Representative Bundy, question.
Mr. Chairman, I'll continue to maintain my objection and a brief comment. I think we've discussed it thoroughly. My concerns remain the same. I passed out to the committee earlier today some reports that indicated that in other states where they've maintained high standards, even for children with IEPs, those children have improved in their abilities, and the numbers that graduate have increased. I feel that the second part of the amendment, the alternative assessment, that is determined by each local district has two basic faults. One is that I think there are local school districts who may find it cheaper and easier to reduce the standard to the student rather than raise the student to a higher standard, and so would be a disservice to special needs students. I also feel that it's a problem because each school board will basically determine what an alternative assessment is. There is no statewide standard. We did have the testimony, as Ben mentioned before, that if someone reaches at a third grade level and that local school board decides that's appropriate, they will get a high school diploma. And I think there are schools in the state that will be pressured to reduce their graduation standards, and so they will, again, not serve the student well. I continue to point out an objection that the part of the amendment, page 4, line 8, where you flag a special ed student's diploma is illegal according to federal law and will invite additional lawsuits. And as such, I strongly recommend that we do not basically dumb down the standards with this diploma.
We had a lot of discussion on this, and I think it was just your comments at this time. I don't believe we need to ask the department to come up again and or anyone. Representative Lancaster?
I could just make a comment, Mr. Chairman, on the amendment.
Please do.
The main thing I'm trying to do with the amendment is work with the department and the School Board Association, as well as my own borough, and Mr. Ed McClain, as you may know, has worked quite diligently on this, and I just appreciate the members' vote to try and make it equal for our special education children. Thank you.
Question?
Question has been called. Is
Mr. Chairman, before you call a question, it's my understanding that there was something, amendment to the amendment being worked on. Has that fallen by the wayside?
Representative Bundy.
Well, it's not before us, but it was a discussion that Representative Lancaster and I had. He wasn't able to support the amendment to the amendment. If you have interest in seeing that, and should this amendment fail, I'd certainly bring it forward.
Any other discussion on the motion? Please call the roll.
Representative Hudson.
Pass.
Representative Lancaster.
Yes.
Representative Moses.
Yeah.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Whitaker.
Yes.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Williams.
Yes.
Representative Hudson.
Yes.
8 yea, 2 nay.
Amendment pass. Any more amendments come before the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move amendment number 3.
Amendment number 3?
Yeah.
I object. I'll call for the question.
Let me just speak briefly and I'll withdraw it. Mr. Chairman, I didn't know whether we would get 105 when I prepared this amendment. It was still pending referral from the prior committee. Didn't know whether we would take action on it or if we did, what that action would be. So prepared this in that context. I'll go ahead and withdraw it. I do want to say that I do think that we're getting very late in the day to just be sending a simple House bill over. I support what 105 is trying to do. This amendment would, of course, wrap in a substantial amount of that funding, the essence of House Bill 105, into the Senate vehicle we have. And I prefer, I think, as a procedural matter, to give this to the Senate in an entire package. And so I do still think this is a preferable approach. But at this time, I'll withdraw it, and we may see it again on the House floor.
Right.
Who wants to say something?
We don't have an amendment to talk about, man.
I'll move the amendment.
All right. Representative Davey.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just like to observe that it doesn't do any harm in the sense of, you know, having too much money on the table, because we could certainly deal with the issue at the end of the conference committee in terms when we deal with fiscal notes. So if we were to get 105 through the process and everything, everybody's happy with that, that'd be great. And then we at the conference committee could zero the fiscal note on 133. If for some whatever reason, as Representative Croft points out, 105 is a House bill. Pretty torturous journey it's got to go through yet. Maybe we should have a little insurance, and putting something like this on 133 might be a good idea from that point of view. And like I said, we're certainly not going to do both. And at the end, if for some reason both were to happen, we can take care of it at the conference committee. I withdraw the amendment, though.
Mr. Chairman, ready for motion?
Representative Hudson.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 133-S as amended with attached fiscal note out of the committee with individual recommendation to ask unanimous consent.
Any objections? Not so ordered. We don't have to deal with the...
That's a mouthful.
You guys don't have to leave.
What are they all here for?
I'm going to feel lonely now.
I think I'll leave with him.
You got any people mad?
For sure.
It's good to have
you. Lord, they're all here.
What are you saying, Bowen?
You do have.
I came out. Yeah, I wish I could come out.
Bill, you need.
Yeah, I appreciate you thinking
about it. We'll call the meeting back to order. HCR 14 is up before us. I'd like motion to move.
14? You want a motion to move it out?
I'll go ahead and move HCR 14
out of committee with the attached fiscal note with individual recommendations.
Any objection to that motion?
HCR,
Mr. Chairman. I object.
Title change. You object? Representative Davies?
Right. Could I have a brief of these, please?
HCR 14. No objection. Sorted. Okay. Yeah, we'll have a 2-minute of these. We have to wait for the sponsor. Okay. We are on record. Next bill we're going to hear is 179, and we do have a sponsor here finally.
Finally.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, before you, House Bill 179. In 1994, the legislature enacted the Use It and Lose It law for minors who are caught possessing or using alcohol. And if a minor was caught, his or his driver's license was administratively revoked for a particular period of time, depending on the number of offenses. In December of last year, just prior to convening this session, the Alaska Supreme Court in the State versus Niedermeyer case found that taking away a minor's driver's license for possession or consumption of alcohol or a controlled substance without giving them a trial was a violation of the minor's constitutional right to due process. That didn't basically revoke use it, but it created such an administrative problem and high cost. In other words, any minor caught could select and opt for the right to have a jury trial. that effectively it's destroyed the legislature's policy of removing the license from a minor as the primary penalty for consuming alcohol. The fact is that because of the Niemeyer decision, is that minors now go virtually unpunished for possessing or consuming alcohol. The maximum penalty that can currently be enforced on minors who are caught is $300, typically the fine for the first offense and so forth is much lower than that. So it's a violation with a very small monetary fine right now. But the point in fact is, Mr. Chairman, the district attorney's office around the state are not prosecuting these cases. Therefore, the troopers and the law enforcement agencies of the various municipalities are, to the my best of my knowledge right now, aren't even really enforcing the current violation status because of the fact that the law is in such limbo right now. So it's absolutely necessary that the legislature take this bill up, pass it this year, to enforce what we believe should be the policy on minor consuming in the state. This is absolutely essential. And, Mr. Chairman, this bill will establish a graduated system of punishments for minors who are caught consuming alcohol on a minor's first offense, and I draw the committee's attention to this chart that was created by the Department of Law. I would notice that under the second offense, the license revocation, it should say 3 months or 6 months, but only if treatment is not completed or community work service performed. There's a small typo there. It shows, it breaks down the various levels of sanctions used to enforce this new law.
Well, sir, this should be 3 instead of 6?
No, the 6 is okay, just add 3 months. So on the second offense, there's a 3-month revocation, which goes to 6 months if they don't complete the treatment or work service.
Okay.
And I'll just go through it very briefly, Mr. Chairman, there. As I said, on a minor's first offense, he or she would be subject to a fine between $200 and $600, must attend alcohol information school, and will be placed on probation. I interject right here, Mr. Chairman, that the Judiciary Committee provided a provision that we'll talk about that allows the judge or the court the full discretion to send this first offender to a community diversion panel, which is defined under statute, or something such as a youth court, a tribal council situation, but something that the court is familiar and comfortable with or has been sanctioned under statute. So we've taken a step there, I think, is a very positive step. On the minor second offense, a minor would be guilty, repeat minor consuming, and would be subject to a fine of $1,000, at least 48 hours of community service, a 3-month license revocation and probation. On a minor's third offense, and just to stop right now, these two first offenses are still violations. They haven't risen to the criminal level. But a minor's third offense would cause them to be guilty of habitual minor consuming, and this, Mr. Chairman, would be a Class B misdemeanor, therefore a crime. So what this bill does, it takes the step towards recriminalization of minor consumption, but only for habitual minor consuming. The third offense would result in the fines up to $1,000, 90 days in jail. In addition, the minor would lose his or her license for a period of 6 months, and then be required to do 96 hours of community service. Mr. Chairman, I think it's very important that this legislature set a policy that sends a very clear message to the youth of this state that the consumption of alcohol, particularly for a young person, can be physically and mentally damaging to them. That's why we do have restrictions. And I think that this is a common sense approach. We've worked with the administration, the Department of Law, and the various other elements of the administration in trying to put together a program that provides for adequate screening, evaluation, and treatment of these young people. And, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation. There's a couple of technical amendments and another amendment. There's three that were provided to the committee. And I don't know if you would wanted to take additional testimony before we got to those or not, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly endorse where you're going with this, but I do question why you're going three times. I mean, it's pretty obvious that not every miner who consumes gets caught. I'm willing to bet the vast majority don't. But if you are getting caught for the third time, you've got to be a pretty habitual drinker or really unlucky. And I would guess that the second offense would be the time that you start to have some serious consequences rather than two slaps on the wrist.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would respond to that if I might. The second offense does demand the option for a jury trial because it does mandate a 3-month revocation, 48 hours of community service, and a fine of up to $1,000. Now, compared to what we've got now, I think that's a pretty hard, that's a little bit more than a slap and arrest. And I would say the testimony before the Judiciary Committee, and Mr. Chairman, we had at least a half a dozen hearings on this bill, and it was really tried to make sure we had this thing right, was that under the current use-it-and-lose-it statute, there is juveniles in the state that have up to 7 offenses against them or more, and there was this huge problem with this. We were kind of pyramid-building the length of revocation of licenses that they had into their 30s or something. It was getting out of hand, and because it was handled administratively, it just was not really working correctly. Because all we were doing is saying, well, you can't have a license for half of your life, but there's no other consequences. So it's clear to me, Mr. Chairman, that the use it, lose it alone was a failure in terms of getting the message across. I'm also reluctant to recriminalize for a one incident or something, but if we get to that level, wherein there is certain evidence from the number of multiple convictions in jurisdictions throughout the state that that does occur.
Representative Bundy.
Yeah, I guess maybe I don't completely understand your chart. There's a revocation of license for the second offense, but only if they don't complete community service or...
Oh, there was a typo there. I'm sorry. It should be 3 months.
Yeah, okay. So there's a revocation of 3 months if they don't complete community service or revocation.
No, it's 6 months if they don't complete it. It's 3 months. It's a given 3 months.
Okay, so it's automatic 3 months. Once their, Mr. Chairman, if I might,
please,
and once their license has been revoked, then it's SR-71 insurance, they're going to driving it?
Potentially it could be, although there's a provision we're going to take out because of that in the bill here, or if the committee wants, but that could be another consequence. Well, they have to show financial responsibility to have their license reinstated.
And I'm sorry to be slow on this. Kid gets caught the second time. He gets 3 month revocation.
Yes.
And now when he wants his license reinstated, under current law, what does he have to do?
Show his financial responsibility.
And that would be?
That would be showing he has insurance or a bond on the vehicle.
And
but if we mandate it as it is now and there's a recommendation from DMV, that we remove that provision of the bill because it would mandate SR-22, which is the higher insurance premium.
If I might continue, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. If we don't mandate it, does then the young person drive without insurance, or you allow them to be insured?
No, the current law, the default would be current law would be enforced, that they'd have to have insurance as everybody is supposed to have insurance in the state.
I'm sorry, I apologize for not...
Mr. Chairman, if I might... ask Representative Bundy if we might withhold the question until we get to that amendment, and there's a gentleman from DMV that can answer that perhaps better.
Any other questions for the sponsor? Thank you, Norm. Or Representative Roper.
Take up those amendments after we have the testimony.
Anybody here? I'll go to public testimony, I guess. Do we have anybody in public testimony?
under my, right here. We do have do you have anybody that would like to give public testimony, not the department, other than the department? Either on teleconference or here in the audience. If not, we'll close public testimony. What I'd like to do is maybe get the amendments before us, and we can have the department come up and talk on the amendments. Representative.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed the very beginning here. I, as long as we've got the sponsor here, I'm wondering here on your sponsor statement, in a minor's first offense, he'd be subject to a fine and must attend alcohol information school. I'm wondering, like, if a trooper happened to be down in St. Michael on his patrol and he caught a minor DWI on a snow machine, for example, or drinking there, I'm trying to think how he would attend an alcohol information school. I mean,
if it's available, we have provisions for that.
Okay.
We have the Foster Amendment in here. I mean, no.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm just.
No, that we did okay. Try to take that into consideration.
Okay. Thank you.
Which one of these amendments are the easiest?
Mr. Chairman, there was one. The easiest would be page 2, line 3, following the word group, 2 lines 4.
Okay, I'll move the amendment.
Do we have the amendment?
We'll object.
I'll object for point of discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, this was suggested by the court system to clarify the selection of a community diversion panel. If you look at here, this is on the first offense. That what the intention of the Judiciary Committee here was that we wanted to give the judge or the court the flexibility to suspend the sentence and send the miscreant, the violator, to a community diversion panel, such as a youth court, other village or tribal entity that would have the authority and ability to deal with this offender. This, I think, will help in a great deal to take care of these first offenders and lower the cost to the legislature and the state. And what the language in the bill currently has approved by the court or the Department of Health and Social Services. The court, I think, rightly has suggested this amendment to take the actual formal approval by either branch of government out and basically leave it back into the court's hands to provide maximum flexibility. That's what this amendment does, and I approve of this amendment. Because it says selected by the court rather than approved by the court or department, and that's the thrust of the amendment.
Question on amendment? Representative Davies?
I support the amendment. I just point out that it also clarifies what consider a violation, and it makes it more clear. It's to serve as a sentencing option for persons convicted, and I think that's a good clarification as well. So,
right. That's precisely the intention there. I think it's the restorative justice and trying to come up with some more innovative methods of dealing with offenders, and particularly youthful offenders, that we have made available in the past, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions on the amendment? Objection still? Objection?
I withdraw my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Any other objection? If not, the amendment passed.
Chairman, shall we call that amendment number one?
Amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, next, if you would like to take up page 6, lines 5 through 6, as amendment number 2, if you... I appreciate it.
I'll move that amendment.
I'll object to it.
Mr. Chairman, what this does, this speaks to the issue that Representative Bundy brought up, that right now the bill requires that they shall require proof of financial responsibility before restoring a person's privilege to drive that is revoked under this section. I believe it's the DMV's opinion that leaving the language in the bill will mandate an SR-22 type of policy, and therefore might raise the ire of enough parents in the state that they'd come down on our heads. And, you know, if this is the right policy, I'm not so sure. I think depending on the level of offense, I think it's up to the insurance company to review that, and I think that taking this out, I think, is a reasonable way to go. I believe that Mr. Chuck Hopsack may be online from DMV or a representative from DMV to speak to this amendment. They recommended it.
Mr. Chuck, are you there?
I might have burned everybody out.
What's your chair?
Mr. Hopsack?
Chuck? Chuck, are you there?
Yes, I am online.
You care to speak to the amendment? Number?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, my name is Chuck Hosack. I am Deputy Director of Division of Motor Vehicles. And as Representative Roper said, we do support this amendment removing this provision. The minor consuming is, of course, not a driving-related offense. And when this bill was, or when a minor in possession was originally